And here is last Sunday's broadcast of Suffering Well and the rewards that come with it. Hello and welcome to Speaking with Carl Thornton Jr. If you provide the fire,
I'll provide the sacrifice.
I'll provide the sacrifice.
If you pour out your spirit, then I will open up inside. Fill me up.
Casey J. inspiring us to ask the Lord to fill us up.
Fill me up, God.
Ah, yes, that is a great request to ask God to fill us with Himself. It is so important, ladies and gentlemen, that we do this. We've been told that we need to be offering ourselves as living sacrifices. It's the best offering we can give to God, far greater than any money we can bring to the table. Because, as I've shared before, God accepts whatever financial offering that we may bring, only if He has first accepted us. Remember, Cain's offering was rejected because Cain himself was rejected. Yes, let's offer ourselves as living sacrifices to our God who loves us, who cares for us, who wants the best for us, even if it means burning out that which is in us that should not be, so that He can fill us up with more of what should be Himself and His goodness. And that is part of what we must go through as we learn to suffer well. That is part of what suffering well is about: dealing with the trials of life that can make life at sometimes just simply a little bothersome, at other times downright miserable. Suffering well, letting the Spirit of God give us the ability to be patient without complaining. See, when we wait patiently, we wait without complaining. We wait without griping. We wait without murmuring. These are all things that the Israelites did in their journey through the wilderness as God led them through and by Moses, their leader, whom God appointed as their leader. And when things weren't going the way they wanted them to, they'd complain, they'd murmur, and God let them know that was not acceptable to Him. They needed to stop doing that. They were not suffering well. They were not suffering tremendously, but what little suffering they were going through, they did not do it well. At one point, early in the travels, they gave themselves over to all kinds of illicit sex, sinful sex. The sex is not what is sinful. It is only when we're with those with whom we should not be, when we're gaining sexual pleasure from those from whom we should not be gaining it, that it becomes sexual sin. And not because they were under a whole lot of pressure, but because they blamed it on Moses having been gone for so long. Remember, he went up into the mountain and he was communing with, fellowshipping, talking with, and learning from God for 40 days and 40 nights. That is some time, no doubt. 40 days is 40 days. 40 days is not the same as 2 or 3 days. But 40 days is not the same as 365 days either. 40 days and 40 nights he was gone. And before he completed the 40 days and 40 nights, the people who were being led by God into freedom decided to enslave themselves by degenerating into sexual sinners. They were not suffering well. At that point, we're not even given an indication that they were suffering at all. They were just being impatient. As for this fellow Moses, we don't know where he is or when he's coming back. What a way to talk about the man of God, to address the man, to call the man of God, this fellow. And it's so easy for people to be so disrespectful to genuine saints of God, whom they've decided they don't have to fear. But when God gets involved, Miriam didn't fear Moses either. And God made her a leper. Korah and the 250 who were with him didn't fear Moses either. God opened up the earth and swallowed them up alive, killed them, had that earth closed back over them and killed them. And here's the thing, Moses didn't even have to ask God to do that. God determined he was going to show them who he was with. And how many foolish people have had close calls in their lives because of their sins against a genuine saint of God, and they were so caught up in darkness they couldn't connect the dots. They could not realize that what was happening to them or what was happening to a family member was a direct result of their sin against a genuine saint of God. And God was showing his displeasure. Oh, and he's not through. Very often when people have those close calls, and then God in his mercy has mercy, they very foolishly conclude that they can continue to get away with sinning against God by sinning against his people. That can only last so long before God says enough is enough. How many people are witnessing with their own eyes someone whose life has been devastated because of their ongoing sin against someone else? And they fail to accept that there is a line that God draws in the sand for anyone. And here's part of the story, part of the lesson. We have to realize that it's important that we determine that if we truly, truly intend to please God, we truly intend to be saints who follow through to the end. And not just halfway, not three-fourths of the way, to the end. Whenever that end for any given individual comes, we've got to suffer well. Now, I want us to get back to where we were looking at some of the rewards for suffering well. Because that's one thing, that's one of the many things that I love about God, that I admire about God. He does not require that we go through tough times just to go through tough times. He does require that we go through tough times, but not just for the sake of going through the tough time. It's because he wants us to be partnering with him and bringing greater and greater levels of purity to our hearts, our minds, our bodies, our souls. Yes, our bodies too, because the body talks about how even our flesh can be contaminated by the sin that is in us. Yes, purifying our bodies and our souls. Or if you like, our bodies with our souls, purifying ourselves, letting God purify us in the ways that only he can purify us. And then so that in the end, the ultimate, we live forever in his presence with joy and with peace that are far beyond our imagination. In his presence, able to see him, to talk with him the way we talk with each other, but talk with him without any more of the fear, because we will have cleansed ourselves like the people in the Great Tribulation who will have washed their robes white. We will have cleansed ourselves according to the command in James chapter 1. And we will have let God cleanse us in ways that only he can cleanse us. And we will finally be in his presence as spotless people, able to fully enjoy our Creator. And then, although not as great a level, as intense a level of pleasure as being with God in his presence, but still truly a great pleasure as well, being in his holy city, the New Jerusalem. And those of you who were able to listen in from the last conversation we had, you know I left off where we were looking at the New Jerusalem, and we were talking about its size. And just as a reminder, and for those of you who may have missed that conversation, we're talking about roughly 1,400 miles. Roughly 1,400 miles. One city that is approximately 1,400 miles in length, 1,400 miles in width, and 1,400 miles in height. Now, if you look at the length, as I shared last week, that would take you roughly from North Carolina to Texas. Roughly central North Carolina, roughly to central Texas. That's the length that this new Jerusalem is going to be, the new holy city that's going to come down from heaven, from God, out of heaven. From central North Carolina to central Texas, that's the approximate length. That is also the approximate width. That is also the approximate height that that city is going to be. So if you gather that in your mind, get a picture in your mind of the New Jerusalem going from North Carolina to Texas in length. And then in your mind, get that same length, that same span, and take it across. That's how wide the city is going to be. Then take that same measurement, central North Carolina to central Texas, roughly, and take that measurement up. That's how high it's going to be. That is not, ladies and gentlemen, the new Israel. That will be the new Jerusalem. One city is going to be that size in the new earth. That is what you call huge, humongous, whatever descriptive term you want to use to indicate much bigger than large, much bigger than big. One city. Think about the size of Texas, how big that state is. How many of you have ever traveled through Florida from north part of Florida to the southern part of Florida? You're traveling for some time. How many of you have traveled from Georgia to Texas? You're traveling for some time. And you've gone through how many states from Georgia to Texas? Several states. We're talking about one city that is going to be larger than from Georgia to Texas. From North Carolina to Texas. One city that distance. That's going to be amazing. Back in Revelation chapter 21, it said in verse 11, that the city shone with the glory of God. This city, as the Apostle John saw it, shone with the glory of God. And its brilliance was like that of a very precious jewel, like a jasper, clear as crystal, that had been thoroughly purified, cleansed, and polished. That's the way that city is going to be. It had a great high wall with 12 gates and with 12 angels at the 12 gates. On the gates were written the names of the 12 tribes of Israel. There were 3 gates on the east, 3 on the north, 3 on the south, and 3 on the west. The wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. That's a reward. Again, very often we have people are given offers to make contributions to the construction of a building or an expansion, and they're told that if they will donate a certain amount, they can have their names engraved on a brick or whatever, so that whenever someone walks into that building, they can see the names of those who contributed. And that's a reward. That is a way of rewarding those contributors for their contributions. The 12 apostles of the Lamb did a tremendous job in helping the Lamb establish his word and his way in the world. And as a result, as a reward, their names are going to be on the 12 foundations of the most fascinating city ever. And anytime anyone enters that city, they will see those names of those 12 apostles on the 12 foundations of that awesome, awesome city. That is going to be part of their reward for having suffered well, for having been faithful to the Lord Jesus. I look forward to seeing their names on those 12 foundations. Verse 15, the angel who talked with me had a measuring rod again of gold to measure the city. And I told you, 1,400 miles long, wide, and high. And it's so interesting that he pointed out that the wall, which measured 144 cubits thick, roughly 200 feet thick. A wall, 200 feet. So to begin to get a picture of that, let's go up. Imagine a building that is about 3 stories high. That's roughly 30 to 40 feet. 3 stories now. You've probably all been in a situation where you've looked at a building that had 3 stories or more. You were looking at a building that was somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 to 40 feet high. Maybe it had 8 stories. Looking at, let's say, a 7-story building. And you're looking at the 7th story, the 7th floor. You're looking at roughly 70 to 80 feet of height. Roughly 70 to 80 feet, depending on how high the ceilings are and exactly how they're measuring, which can change from one building to the next. That's why I'm saying, you know, roughly 70 to 80 feet for a 7-story building. And you're looking up quite a ways, right? Roughly 70 to 80 feet. Now, bring that measurement down so that it's parallel with the ground. Instead of perpendicular, almost at a right angle, it's parallel, just above the ground. The whole distance from the first foot to the 80th foot, 80 feet. This wall is going to be 200 feet, almost 3 times the length. Almost 3 times the length of that 7-story building. Of that 7-story building's height. 600 feet according to man's measurement, the Bible says. So we know this is something that we can relate to. Back in a few, as we talk more about the rewards for suffering well.